Welcome to Squibload Podcast. I'm Sean, and joining me not here is Case. By myself today, and you know, we could have taken a week off just because Case's and I's schedules didn't line up, we couldn't get in the same room to record audio, and we could have taken a week off, but I decided that it was important to get this out, and even if it's just me, I feel like I can get an hour of content out and still talk with our listeners, and might be a good change of pace. Case and I are usually pretty boisterous and loud, and just me today, so it'll be kind of a more chill Squib episode, but to that point, I thought I'd just explain that I'm actually traveling right now, so I'm recording this in a hotel, so apologies for any external sounds you might hear or if the quality is a little bit different than normal, and also apologies there's not going to be any intro or outro music this time. It's something I'm thinking about working on in a different way in the future, thinking about upping our production quality in a lot of different ways, and I really want to thank everybody for listening and making me rethink that. Squib was really originally supposed to be just a fun thing that Case and I did once a week and get our ideas out there and just talk, because we were doing this anyway. Even before we started recording ourselves, we were already talking about guns and gun culture multiple times a week. And we thought, you know, enough people talk to us about this thing, we really ought to just put something out there. But it's kind of taken off to a point where I feel that I need to up our production quality, and I actually feel quite a bit of obligation to get new content out each week. So thanks everybody for listening, and I will stay committed to this and do my best to get some stuff out for you guys to listen to once a week. But and on the topic of the origins of Squibload, and some people occasionally ask us this, but I really just told the whole story right there. Case and I have been best friends for a very long time now, and one of our favorite things to do together is shoot guns. And even when we're not actively shooting, we're dry firing, we're talking about kit and gear, and we're watching YouTube videos on guns and talking about the latest drama. And we were just having drinks together and talking about guns so often. And every once in a while, we'd have a third person or a fourth person join us, and they're like, man, you guys are really, you know your stuff. And the idea was planted in my head when some people said that they would just listen to us talk and they didn't even want to be involved in the conversation. They just want to hear Case and I bounce ideas back and forth off each other. And I thought, you know, if people that don't know anything about guns want to hear us talk, then why not just put it out there? And the reception to it's been pretty insane to me. I never would have thought that there would be so many people listening to me on a weekly basis just talking about my hobby. And sometimes it's people who don't know anything about guns at all, but they just want to hear us. So thanks again, guys, for that. And I do really want to stick with this and put out content as often as we can and stay consistent with it. We haven't missed a week yet. You know, we've had it be where we're a day late or so, but nothing too crazy like missing an entire episode. And traveling into my personal life won't stop me from doing it. So with that, origins of Squib. Yeah, kind of just told the story there. But Case and I have known each other for, about 10 years now. And we've been, like I said, favorite thing to do together is shoot, but we also like to work out and talk and watch YouTube. And of course, we both like to go out and drink and have a good time there. So it really just made sense. I can't think of another person I'd want to start a podcast with, just because Case and I've never been a particularly talkative or social person. And, you know, he's a little bit different than me. He's very social and has got a lot of friends and is very good at making new friends. And when you put us into a room together, I feel that we have this great chemistry and this great combination of wildness and calm. And we're both, I'd like to think, very educated and intellectual in our chosen fields. And when we mix, it's really something special. So looking forward to getting back home and hanging out with him again soon. And we'll get another normal episode out to you guys next week. With that, I've got a list of topics here. I do want to try to be a bit more personable with this episode, just because it's just me and you guys are in my hotel room listening to me, so I'm going to talk about myself and some of my favorites and maybe about the podcast. I might talk about Case a little bit too, but first off, I want to talk about some of my favorite guns, and I'll start with my favorite gun to shoot. And this is a topic that is regularly changing to me. I get asked this all the time. What's my favorite gun? It's overdone, it's oversaid, but it's like asking someone who their favorite child is. And the answer is, well, I love all my children equally. I like almost all my guns equally. There's some stinkers in that group, but it gets so hard to choose, right? Because there's different categories. And, well, I have my favorite rifle and I have my preferred handgun that I've been using recently, but what about my carry gun and all these other things, right? But I was able to narrow it down thinking about this today, and I think my answer at the end of the day has got to be my Glock 47 Gen 5. And I know there's probably a lot of listeners already snoozing because I'm Glock fanboying again, and I'm choosing the most basic answer I could. But I've got a lot to say about the Glock 47. Number one, this is not your grandpa's Glock. This is the latest and greatest Glock. It's got all the best features on it. For those who don't know, the Glock 47 is basically just, it's a Glock 17 slide on a Glock 19 frame with a Glock 19 recoil spring. It's just a great gun. You might think that that might be a weird mishmash of stuff, or changing the lengths of everything, but it actually makes an incredibly smooth shooting gun that's a decent size. And the Border Patrol just adopted it as their duty handgun, which is very interesting to me. I'm not sure if this was due to a sourcing issue, if they couldn't get Glock 17 Gen 5 MOSs, because there's been a lot of shortages of it. But after getting my hands on the gun and shooting it a lot myself, I really think that they shot this gun and just preferred it over the Glock 17. I've shot a number of different generation Glock 17s and Model 22s, and the list goes down. I've shot a ton of Glocks over in my years, and the 47 is probably the highest quality one that I've shot, and it's certainly preferred by me. And that's one of the reasons I chose it as my latest competition handgun, and I've quickly gotten tons of rounds through it. I think I'm at roughly 8.5, maybe closer to 8,000 rounds through it, and I've had it for a little bit less than a year. So that shows you how much I shoot and practice with that gun in particular. Not a ton, but it's not like I'm new to it either. And, you know, after that many rounds, no parts replacements. I try to clean it like once every few weeks, especially after a particularly harsh range session. And it has just never let me down. Any malfunctions I've had are due to really cheap ammo or extremely poor conditions. But I've put the gun through what I would consider to be abuse in the past, and it has just powered through and continued to work. You know, most handguns are going to be more accurate than I am. I'm pretty competent with my accuracy, but it's not like I've sat at a bench rest with this Glock and tried to shoot at 200 yards. I haven't done that. The farthest I've shot is 80 yards, and it's perfectly capable of doing that. The question is, are you as a shooter capable of making those shots with a handgun? The answer for me is sometimes. Sometimes, and if I'm not on the clock, it's not too bad. Glock 47 has got to be my answer. The ergonomics of it, might be surprising for you to hear, but the ergonomics of the Glock 47 are, in my opinion, unmatched as far as handguns go, especially in its price range. I got mine for about $650, and it was optics ready, and it's just, out of the box, it's a fantastic handgun. Case and I have been a bit critical of quote-unquote Glock killers before, Canix and things of that nature, and I've really never been a fan of those guns. I don't really understand their selling point. I've really tried. I've shot a lot of them, and it's just they're not the same. Glocks, to me, they work. They've got great aftermarket support. So if you're wondering about me, I know it's probably not surprising to anyone. Glock 47 is my favorite Glock fanboy all the way. If you want to expand it past just, you know, a more generic term of like, what's my favorite rifle? Well, it gets way more complicated. I like my AR-15. I have a custom-built BCM that I love. It's fantastic. I put a MIMTAC trigger in there. They're kind of coming up on the market. They were very lesser known when I discovered them. I think they had like less than 100 followers on their social media pages, and now they're getting sponsored by Polinar. A lot of people are buying them, but they're constantly out of stock, so really happy to see them taking off. But yeah, MIMTAC triggers from Turkey are fantastic triggers. I have one in my competition rifle in my BCM. That might be my favorite rifle. I also really like, if you consider it a rifle, Vichyaz pattern AKs, like the pistol caliber AKs, are fantastic. Palmetto State makes the AKV, and if you haven't already got one, please go buy one. They are fantastic guns. Better than Kalashnikovs, which is, I can't believe I'm saying that a PSA product is better than the original manufacturer, but they are. I've shot both, and the KPUSA, I think it's just called the KP1, but their Vichyaz version of their AK pattern, Vichyaz, it's fine, it works, but the PSA one is just fantastic. It's built well, it doesn't feel clunky and like it's put together out of Lego blocks like some PSA guns are. It just works. It's a great rifle. As a third and fourth option, I also really like, I have a TC300 rifle, made by Thompson Center, and, that gun shoots 300 Winchester Magnum, and it's just a Remington 700 clone. But it, again, it's one of the rare examples of a clone being better than the original product. I've shot Remington 700s, a number of them, and this TC300 is just, it keeps working. The single downside I can point to is that the bolt face gets dirty rather quickly, dirtier than a lot of other bolt action rifles I've fired. So it does need to be cleaned and taken care of properly, but in its category of what I would consider a sniper rifle, you really should be cleaning it often anyway. So how much of a problem is that? I don't know. You be the judge, as Paul Harrell would say. But I love my TC300. I love shooting big rifle calibers and hitting stuff really far away. That's an extremely satisfying experience if you've never done it before. Just seeing something really tiny in the distance and scoping in and just knocking it down with that big, powerful round. Really fun. Last answer for favorite, in the category of DMRs, I can never decide. I admittedly don't have a ton of experience with DMRs, or at least I don't have experience using them for their intended purpose, but I have shot a number of SCAR rifles, and I love the SCAR pattern of rifles. I know that the SCAR 20 is kind of a, they took it farther in the DMR direction, but you can still get the SCAR 17s or the SCAR 16s that, you know, the SCAR 17, I would say, could be used as a DMR. I know that in the Ukraine conflict, they're using it as a DMR. And maybe it's not the best in that role. Like, I'm sure you could find, like, an AR-10-ish kind of gun that does its job better. You could find tons of different battle rifles or DMRs that maybe do the job better. But so there's something about the SCAR. It just feels right. I would compare it to a Glock in terms of its ergonomics and its comfort on the shooter, and also just the aesthetics of it. I know it's kind of cheating, but that is a swagged out gun. That's a sexy gun. I'm still budgeting out for mine. I would really like to get a SCAR 17 with an Elcan scope, and I'm a little ashamed to admit it's purely for the aesthetics. That Elcan scope on a SCAR 17 looks amazing. Now, how useful is it? I've heard many mixed reviews on both the Elcan and the SCAR 17. I've shot the SCAR 17 quite a bit, and I've even shot it on full auto, and I'm a big fan of that. It's a great machine gun, even if it's really not designed to be used in full auto. That's not its strong point, I wouldn't say. I would say it's really good at like 250 yards and further. That's where it shines. They also make the SCAR 17 CQBR, which is close quarter battle rifle, if you're not a nerd like me. And that's also a fantastic rifle. You know, I don't want to speak for any other groups, but I know that in certain military groups that have adopted it, they prefer that shorter barrel on there. I guess with 308, you're not missing a whole lot when you go from like an 18 to a 12-inch barrel. I know you lose a lot of velocity, but I guess it's still good enough because they're using it and that's what they prefer. So, yeah. Those are my favorite guns to shoot and to use. So SCAR 17, TC300, my custom BCM, and then that Glock 47. You know, and shotguns, I'll be the first to tell you, I have a lot less experience with shotguns than a lot of other people, but I really am just a Benelli fanboy. Anything Benelli, M2, Supernova, M4, all those Benelli shotguns are fantastic. I've shot a number of Remingtons and Mossbergs and stuff, and kind of to me, a pump-action shotgun is a pump-action shotgun. They generally work in a similar enough way that unless they're, if they're not a complete hunk of shit, then they're probably working fine. Yeah, slides can be clunky. I've seen shells get stuck in magazine tubes, and that's never great. But if you budget out a few hundred dollars, you can get a shotgun, a pump-action shotgun that just works, and they're fine. So there's not a whole lot to talk about there. We could get more specific into, like, you know, military shotguns and quote-unquote assault shotguns and semi-automatic stuff. And I honestly just don't have enough experience in that field to really speak on it. I will say I've shot the Benelli M4. I know Case has as well, and that is a really great gun. I'm sure there's better options out there. Specifically, the Genesis Gen 12 shotgun I think is better than the M4, but I've never shot it, so I can't really go out and say that. I just know that everyone who has shot it says it's better than the M4. So those are my favorites. And then I also want to talk about a unicorn gun that I really like for a lot of reasons. And this is a gun that obviously I've never shot. I don't know anyone who has. I don't even know if anyone is alive that has shot this gun. Maybe prototypes of it. But I know that there's at least one working copy in the world. I think there's three or four working copies in the entire world. But the gun I'm talking about is the HK G11. And you might be thinking, HK, I know that brand. Well, you probably don't know this gun. And if you do, you may have played one of the few video games that it was in. I think it was in one of the Call of Duty Black Ops games, but I don't know it from that. I know it from really old ads that HK used to put out about the weapons of the future, and every once in a while they'll put it in, you know, their ads for like it's their most prized vault gun. But essentially, what the G11 is the result, the product rather, of a lot of testing that NATO did in the late 20th century to develop basically a next generation gun that would replace the standard issue rifles of every NATO country. So this would replace the FALs, the M16s, the M14s, the G36s, all that stuff, the FAMAS. All of this would be replaced by the G11. They did not achieve that goal in the late 20th century, but they kind of did later with the HK416, which, if you compare the 416 to the G11, they are wildly different products, and they look very, very different. And I'm sure that Eugene Stoner is laughing in his grave because his AR-18 design got adopted by basically every major country in the world. The G11, however, remains in its vault, unadopted. But what makes the G11 special, and why do I love it so much? Well, I do think that it will get its day in the sun, in not its 1968 form, but in a much more modern and space-age-looking design. Basically, the goal of the G11 was to make a rifle for a soldier where they could carry a large amount of ammunition and have a lightweight rifle that was reliable and worked. Essentially what the M16A1 was designed to do, be a lightweight fighting rifle that was designed for more practical uses than a big heavy bolt action thing, right? So think about the bolt action rifles of World War II in comparison to the M1 Garand, right? Those bolt action rifles were overpowered, had low capacity, they were slow, they were not semi-automatic, they were generally heavy and way too long. And then you compare that with the M1 Garand, which at the time was the latest and greatest thing, and we've since come a long way, but it really improved on a lot of those features. It was semi-automatic and still a little overpowered, still a little heavy, but being semi-automatic and having a better loading mechanism allowed a soldier to carry more ammunition and be just a more effective tool on the battlefield, right? I think the G11 set very practical goals, and the designers of the rifle asked very good questions when they were making the rifle. Kind of the big selling point of the G11 was that it was a bullpup, so the magazine actually fed into the top of the gun above the barrel, and the firing mechanism was a good bit behind that. It almost looks like that quad bazooka that Arnold Schwarzenegger uses in Commando. It kind of looks like a big boxy thing with a hand grip in front of it, and then it had a big custom NATO scope thrown on the top of it. So way ahead of its time in that. They wanted to assign everybody an optic, and it varied throughout its development cycle from a 2x scope to all the way, I think it was like 11 times power, which is the farthest they went, which is ludicrously far range for a gun that is shooting what is basically a 7.62x39 round. The other major selling point of the G11 was its caseless ammunition, which, again, you don't see people adopting that in any major military because the technology just isn't there, and that's for a lot of reasons. But the concept behind it is very practically, it comes from a place of practicality, and I think it was great that it was explored as an option. It ended up not being viable. I think that's the main reason the G11 was not adopted, is because caseless ammunition, the world just wasn't ready for it in the 60s and 70s, and it's not ready for it now, even in 2024. But the G11 was this big boxy rifle, and you put in these large stick-shaped magazines into the gun almost entirely. Like, you could not see the magazine sticking out of the gun, but they had anywhere from 60 to 90 round capacity, and it shot in semi-automatic, burst fire, or full auto. And it had a hyperburst feature very similar to the AN-94. So you've got semi-automatic, which is self-explanatory. You pull the trigger, you get one shot. You've got your hyperburst feature, which achieved ludicrous rates of fire. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know it's much faster than like the MG42 machine gun. If you've seen Saving Private Ryan, you know what I'm talking about. And then the full auto was a much more controllable 600 rounds a minute, which is that's on par with like your M4A1s and your AKMs. It's floating right around that comfortable fully automatic setting, right? But with this caseless ammunition, the idea was to make lighter ammo. If your projectile was not four parts, it wasn't bullet, casing, powder, primer, it was just one unit that weighed much, much less, then a soldier could carry more of it. And if he can fit 60 or 90 rounds in his gun, then he can carry more on his body, and he won't have to be resupplied as often. He'll be more mobile because he doesn't have as much weight on him. It will free up his capacity for other things such as body armor or new equipment. Because, you know, this was the age of people were starting to wear flashlights and very, very early night vision devices on their person. So they wanted to free up that space for other stuff, not bandoliers of 30-06, right? So they developed this caseless ammunition, and they just could not get the rifle to reliably work. And they ended up making this extremely extravagant action for the gun that I can't explain to you in my words. You'd be better looking at a diagram with pictures and numbers. And there's videos on the internet that describe how it works, but it's very similar to the AN-94's hyperburst, delayed long stroke bolt action thing. It's gas powered, but also on a delay. It's weird. I would recommend looking up a video on YouTube, and Forgotten Weapons did a video on it, but this caseless ammunition stuff is fascinating. They did end up making the rifle reliably work. However, the one thing that the rifle really never got over was the fact that nowhere in the world had a good way to set up these new factories for this new ammunition, and it was just going to be expensive to make caseless ammo. And the other really, really big problem with caseless ammo is that it leads to overheating issues in the gun, right? And that leads to cook-offs, which is never a good idea. It's one of the worst problems you can have when designing a new cartridge is, well, this one just keeps going off by itself. So essentially, in a traditional brass-cased cartridge, right, you've got casing, primer, powder, and bullet. And when the round is fired, when that cartridge is fired, that empty casing that ejects out of the gun actually works as a heat sink. If you've gotten loose brass stuck in your shirt or picked one up off the ground after it's been fired, it's hot to the touch and can actually burn you if you hold on to it for too long. But that's actually good for the gun. That heat that is in that casing has been removed from the moving parts of that firearm. But with caseless ammunition, there's nowhere for that heat to go except it's staying in the gun. And this was also in the age of polymers were brand new, so it led to polymers melting that weren't heat resistant. They're not as heat resistant back then as they are now. And the gun just, it never recovered from that design flaw. The technology wasn't there to make a caseless rifle that was both reliable and then also had resistance to overheating. I do think with the technological advancements we've made in the last 50 years, I think it should be re-explored, and I think it will be viable again. One of the main things that I've seen in recent times, and I'm really looking forward to its widespread adoption, is polymer-cased ammunition. So it's not caseless. You still have the issue of that polymer is acting as a heat sink and not overheating the rifle. However, I think that polymer-cased ammunition will be cheaper than brass-cased ammunition in the near future. Right now, it's not. It's like anywhere from 50% to 100% more expensive than regular brass ammo, but that's just because the infrastructure isn't there yet, right? I mean, think about if you order something just made of plastic in general versus made of metal. The plastic is going to be cheaper, and that's how you get things adopted by major militaries, is you make them cheap and you make them work. So I think that's coming in the future, and if we can get polymer to be reliable and cheaper than brass, I think caseless ammo is right around the corner. Guns have really remained the same since around the 1880s in terms of firing mechanisms and actions. The AR-18, AR-15, and AKM actions, they just work. They're reliable, and we've perfected them to a degree where I don't see us making anything better for a long time. The advancements we have made have been in our electronics. So scopes, red dot sights, night vision, all that stuff is getting better. It's getting more lightweight and smaller, and it's getting cheaper. That will continue to happen as well. But maybe in the future, we'll hit a plateau. Maybe in 10 or 15 or 20 years, we'll have mastered the art of seeing in the dark and aiming at close ranges with electronic devices. And then from there, where do you go, right? I've heard people talk about like energy weapons, and I think that's a little sci-fi kooky stuff. We're still a ways off from shooting lasers. I think solid lead and copper projectiles are going to be king for a long time, but who knows? I could be wrong, and we could be living in Star Trek in 30 years. I don't know. But I think caseless and polymer ammo is around the corner, and that's one of the reasons I love the G11. It wasn't adopted, but it makes you ask all these questions of what if and how far off are we from researching this and that. And also, the G11 just looks great. I mean, I know it's a big, it's just a box with a handle sticking out of it, but a 90-round hyperburst rifle with caseless ammo that was going to be used by every NATO soldier. I mean, that's the stuff out of science fiction. That, to me, is awesome. And it's real. It didn't get adopted, and it's not widespread, but there's a working version of this rifle. And I think that a lot of manufacturers and militaries and governments should have learned a lot more from that development cycle than they did, because you still see countries adopting guns that just, they just don't make sense, and they're not good for individual soldiers. They're not asking good questions. And I think HK, when they developed the G11, they were asking good questions. And over time, we've kind of solved them in different ways. But yeah, love the G11. But you guys are probably getting sick of my voice and me talking about my favorite guns. So I'll talk about Case a little bit. Again, he couldn't be here. You know, we talk all the time, and I'm sure he's going to get annoyed when he listens to this, and he knows that I did this without him, and that he's I'm talking about him now. But Case is really a fantastic shooter. It's one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast with him, and nobody but him, is that he just gets a lot of things about guns and shooting. He understands the culture behind firearms. I think one of Case's best qualities as a shooter has nothing to do with his accuracy or his speed or anything like that, even though he's perfectly adequate in those regards. But I think his best quality is something that I see missing from a lot of other shooters and a lot of other people in this industry. His awareness is off the charts, and it's way better than mine. He has such a relaxed posture and mindset when he shoots, and it pays him in dividends. Just, you know, when we're at a match and something unsafe happens or something's not right, he's the first one to notice it before the RSO, before the other competitors. He is the first one to notice it every time. Or even if we're practicing at the range, he's like, "Did you see such and such?" And I go, "No, how did you notice that?" And he's got his eyes open. He's got his ears open constantly. He's an extremely attentive man, and you might not hear it because he's funny and charming, so you might underestimate him a little bit. You might not think he's as smart and attentive as he is, but he's very talented in those regards, and it's one of the reasons I like having him on the podcast, and I also really enjoy going to the range with him. I very much I trust him to have my back with safety stuff. We joked about NDs on our safety episode two episodes ago, and yeah, he's had some NDs, and yeah, they're embarrassing, but he's always been attentive enough to ND in a way that no one got hurt, and it wasn't that big of a deal. I know it sounds bad, but he really is capable and safe. But I just, it's one of the main reasons I like having him around. He's so aware. And that, I think, is the bedrock of all his other skills as a shooter, right? Him being aware of his own shortcomings, which we all have as competitors and shooters. He's like, "Yeah, I'm not as fast at this, or I should have done this and that." He immediately knows what he did wrong when he shoots, and that's such a great skill to have. And I'm a little jealous, because there's definitely been times where I'm hitting plateaus in my training and I don't know what I'm doing wrong and I don't know how to improve. So I have to look at videos of myself and talk to professionals and read forums. And every time I shoot with Case, he's like, "Yep, my grip was off," or "I messed up my trigger pull," or he just knows what he does wrong immediately. I'm a little envious of that, but I'm also very happy for him and weirdly proud, since I'm the one who got him into competitive shooting. So very happy about that. I could talk about my best quality as a shooter. I don't know if I really want to. I don't really want to talk about myself too much, or at least my skills as a shooter. I'd like to think I'm fairly well-rounded with a lot of things. I'm very much open to the idea that I'm not the best shooter in the world. I think I maybe was a little arrogant in previous episodes, and I'm like, "Well, I'm the best shooter in the room," and that's mostly just me bullshitting. I think I'm decent, and I think I practice, and I have the luxury of having access to things that a lot of other people don't have access to. So that enables me to practice more often and train harder than other people might. But I'm certainly nothing special. My skill level is nothing that couldn't be achieved by someone else, given that they practiced as much as I did and they paid attention as often as I do. But yeah, I'm not really sure what my best quality as a shooter is, but it's funny. I'm like, I'm not going to talk about myself. And then I wrote down all these personalized topics to discuss, but a lot of people listening to this are friends with Case, or they discovered us because it was recommended on their Spotify. And I would like to say thank you all again for listening, even if you might not know me or Case. Specifically those who don't know me. I know that there's a handful of my friends who I know in real life that listen to this, and that's very much appreciated. But there's something that's mind-blowing to me that you would listen to me talk when you don't know who I am, you don't know what I look like or my background. One thing that A friend of mine brought up at one point while they were listening to the podcast is they said, well, you guys never talk about your qualifications. Why should we listen to you? And my answer was, well, I've never really thought about that. I don't really know why people listen to anyone. I guess for my qualifications, I could name a few things. And the other reason I haven't talked about this in the past is because I hate talking about myself and I don't want to be arrogant online. I will say I am a competitive shooter and I place in these events. I've been doing it for a little bit now. I've been shooting guns my entire life. And I go to the range just about every week, and it's very rare that I go more than 2 weeks without shooting and practicing. I'm constantly tuned in to gun culture. I watch a lot of GunTube. I read forums. I'm constantly looking out for the latest and greatest technology. I'm also a fan of history, and as it pertains to firearms and military conflicts, I'm really tuned into that as well. I make no claims that I'm an expert in anything other than I'm just a guy who is kind of based most of my free time around this topic. So I guess I'd say that's my qualifications. And yeah, I could get into military stuff as well. Like, I'm qualified to use certain firearms by the U.S. military. But honestly, I hate talking about that. Number one, because I don't want to get too into my personal stuff. And then also, just because it's not really that relevant. Case has so much more experience in that field than I do. I really want to let him talk about the military stuff more. Just because my experience is very brief, and he was in a lot longer than I was. And he's just more aware of that stuff than I am. And I'll be the first to tell you, being in the military does not automatically make you good at shooting. It doesn't make you knowledgeable about guns. Obviously, it depends on your role. There are some guys that are in the military that are way better shooters than me, and they know what they're talking about way more than I do. However, the opposite is also true. There's a lot of people that are in or were in, and I know a lot more than them, and I can shoot way better than them. It's not me being full of myself. It's just the truth. The best shooters in the military that I've ever met have always, and I mean always, gone out on their own free time and practiced and attended classes that were not required by their work. And, you know, honestly, the same kind of applies to police officers. If you're not training on your own free time, you're not researching things, you're not tuned in your personal life, you're just never going to be as good. And you're going to be way less knowledgeable. So, other qualifications. I've just been around a lot of stuff with guns. I know everybody on the internet who talks about guns says that, but I really have been. I've traveled, I've shot a lot of different things. I watch a lot of GunTube, and I've listened to a lot of other quote-unquote experts, and I'd like to think that I listen to everybody equally and consider them, even if I disagree with their stance. There's been plenty of instructors. I mentioned one instructor the other day who doesn't like closing the slide on an empty handgun, an empty semi-automatic handgun. I still think that's ludicrous. I don't think you're incurring any damage on your firearm by closing the gun on an empty magazine, closing the slide on an empty magazine. However, this instructor, if you're talking about revolver shooting, he might be the most knowledgeable man alive. He's extremely good at shooting Smith & Wesson and Colt revolvers. There's videos of him teaching classes and shooting competition, and I value his opinion on those topics, but I just don't agree with him on everything. So I do think that you have to listen to a multitude of sources, listen to a lot of people, and then do what makes the most sense to you. And then also go out and try stuff yourself, right? Don't rely on one source and don't just rely on what you've heard. Go and try stuff if you can. But yeah, I guess that's my qualifications. And again, I talked about this briefly, but a lot of people are listening to this that don't know me. They might know Case, but they only know about me through this podcast. They don't know what I look like. And that's intentional. I don't like talking about myself too much. I don't like to show my face on the internet if I don't have to. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Number one, I don't think my face or my personality and my background and childhood is extremely interesting or important. And then also there's a lot of aspects in my professional and personal life that I would rather not just be floating out on the internet forever. There's a lot of there's a lot of people I follow on the internet who have just put it all out there. I mean, their kids' faces, their wife's identity, and all that stuff. And, you know, I've yet to see anyone who that hasn't come back to bite them in some way, shape, or form. I think just having your name and face out there is one thing. I mean, that's – if people really tried hard, they can find you, right? But having, like, your professional information and your family stuff out there, it's just not something I want to get into. So, you know, my name's here, my voice is here. I think that's about all you're going to get, at least for the time being. Maybe if I quit my day job, I'll show my face on here eventually. But for now, I'm just going to remain anonymous and there's a handful of you listening to this that do know what I look like, and just feel privileged because you're actually by far in the minority now of this podcast viewership, most of our listenership. Most people don't know what I look like or who I am even, but you probably know about this through Case. And Case has no issue showing his face and talking, and he's a braver man than I. Also, isn't it just a bit more interesting if you don't know who I am or what I look like? You get to see me in a balaclava and my camo jacket. That's the image of me you can keep in your head when you're listening to this. Just a guy in a balaclava and military gear sipping tea. That's it. All right, and then the other thing we keep getting, we got a lot of questions and commentary on our previous episodes, and I appreciate everyone who's written in. But people want to hear non-gun topics, as well as we got some interesting feedback on our presidential debate last episode. People brought up Teddy Roosevelt for the fist fight and then Andrew Jackson for a gunfight. Both really good picks. I gotta say, if we're still talking about fist fight, I don't know that Teddy Roosevelt would have beat Lincoln. Teddy Roosevelt was an asthmatic and had health problems. I know he was a boxer and he was very in shape, but that doesn't mean you can beat big, mean, honest Abe. We're talking about that's like a 5 or 6 inch height difference and wingspan that really makes a difference. I think Lincoln was heavier than Roosevelt in his youth. Lincoln didn't have any adverse health effects, not till he was an old man, so I still think Lincoln wins, but Roosevelt is definitely a contender. I mean, I'd say Teddy Roosevelt's top five best physical fighters, presidents. Maybe top three. We'll go with like Lincoln, then Teddy, and then, oh, I don't know, probably George Washington or someone similar after that. But I think those are probably the top three. I did have some non-gun topics I want to discuss. Case and I, we often drink for these episodes. I'm not right now. I think we've done a few where we've been sober, but usually it just kind of keeps us loose, keeps the conversation flowing. Not that that's a struggle with Case and I anyway, but we usually drink Corona beer, or recently we've been having Jack and Coke, whiskey and Coke. And I want to talk about my favorite drinks. And I really do enjoy a drink here and there, obviously everything in moderation, but this is Squibload, so nothing in moderation. Go crazy, go drinking. Have fun. Just don't mix your guns and alcohol. Wink. You do whatever you want. But for me, my favorite drinks, I really like Jack Daniels. Not a huge dark liquor guy, but Jack Daniels mixed with damn near anything is good. I mean, Coke Zero has got to be the number one. People mix it with like regular Coke, and I'm just like, Coke Zero actually tastes better when you mix it with whiskey, personally. Really like Jack Daniels. I'm also a big fan of vodka. And vodka is one of those drinks where I've always felt that it's liquor for people who don't like to drink liquor. And I think that was fitting of me for a very long time. You know, when you're young and you start drinking, you're like, oh, I just want the one that tastes like orange juice. And vodka is right for you. But I've been drinking it enough and for a long enough time now that I've developed kind of a taste and preference for it. And I will say, there will never be a time in my life where I don't like Tito's vodka. And you can mix it with just about anything because it is so ubiquitous and versatile. Orange juice, punch, Kool-Aid, anything. You mix it with anything and it just tastes good. I will say also, dressing the way that I do, I'm usually in business casual, even when I'm just at home by myself. And something nice about having a little drink of vodka and throwing in a tiny amount of juice in there, just enough to say you're not drinking straight vodka and sipping on that as you go about your day. That's a good time. So favorite drink, really like Jack Daniels, really like vodka. Not a huge beer guy, but if I do, I like a super light beer. Like Corona Light is really good. Something thin, kind of just tastes like water. I think beer in general, it's very heavy. Usually tastes like I'm drinking bread. And everyone's making fun of me, this sissy who can't drink beer. But I do really like my Corona Lights. Not a fan of IPAs. Don't like Busch Light or any of that stuff. I mean, I'll drink it. I'm not going to be a bitch. I'll drink it if it's there, but I generally prefer the lighter stuff or some dark liquor like Jack or vodka. So those are my go-tos. Case likes everything. I'll have to ask him when he gets back, but it's been rare that I've offered that man a drink and he's been like, oh, I don't like that. He's kind of like that with everything, though. I mean, really, Case is a guy where if you offer him something like food or drink, he's just on board. He's happy to be part of it, you know? I think I'm kind of the same way. I'm not a picky eater, not a picky drinker. I just want to be involved. I'm not going to not go to something because they're serving food I don't like or drinks I don't like. I'm just going to go there and enjoy it, right? You buy the ticket, you take the ride. That's a lesson we both learned from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas and Hunter Thompson's writing. I'm sure you guys saw, Case and I dressed up as the characters from Fear and Loathing, Raoul Duke and then Attorney Gonzo. I got Case into that story. I know he likes that story quite a bit. I think it was pretty impactful on him. I don't want to speak on his behalf too much here, but that story was incredibly impactful in my life. And it does pertain to guns and gun culture, I think. Just understanding your freedom and subsequently the boundaries of that freedom. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas by Hunter Thompson is a fantastic story. I would recommend everyone read it, but especially young men. Like, guys younger than 20 really ought to read that book. It's just a guide on how to be free. Answers the question, what is freedom? It also proves that there's a lot of intersection between gun-friendly guys like myself, but also those who like to party and be free, right? You don't have to be an uber-Christian conservative who lives on a farm to enjoy guns. You can be a city person, and you can still like your battle rifles and your helmets and your night vision and all that stuff. It's for everyone who is responsible and can handle it, right? Kind of like drug use in that way, right? And that's what Fear and Loathing explores. If you go to Las Vegas and you gamble at a bunch of hotels and you take LSD, does that make you a junkie? Well, it can. Are you a junkie? Are you acting like one? Or can you handle it? Are you a free man? Can you still be responsible and maintain yourself and not become a beast, even if you've used drugs to turn yourself into a beast? And to quote Hunter Thompson once more, he who makes a beast of himself gets rid of the pain of being a man. And there's a lot of truth to that sentiment, but also I think you ought to embrace that pain you feel as a man. Both are healthy. You have to do both in life. Life is all about balance. So enjoy your freedoms, enjoy your vices, and party as much as you want. But at the end of the day, you got to remember, you're still a man. You got to be responsible. You can't let it consume you. Guns, you have the exact same thing. It's a necessity of a free man is to have weapons and be proficient with them. You have to do that as a free man. Otherwise, you are counting on someone else to do it for you. And that, my friend, is not freedom. You're being reliant on a system that is there to protect you, and that system will inevitably fail one day. I hope it's not during any of our lifetimes, but it's what happens. So you got to train, you got to be proficient, you got to watch out for yourself, and you also got to enjoy yourself. But never lose sight of the fact that you are a free man. You got to enjoy it. Be responsible too, though. What else? I talked about favorite drinks. Favorite food, like anyone gives a shit. But I don't know. I like sushi. It's hard to find a group of food that I don't like. I love sushi. I love Thai food. Asian cuisine in general is a big favorite of mine. I'm an Italian man myself, so really love Italian cuisine. Spaghetti and meatballs, lasagna, cannoli, all that stuff. And here's some interesting trivia for you. Cannoli is plural. If it ends in I in Italian, then it means more than one. If I was going to say one, it'd be cannolo. But don't ever tell anyone that, because they're going to get really annoyed with you. So biscotti is more than one. Biscotto is one stick that you dunk in your coffee. Cannoli is multiple creamy, crunchy desserts. Cannolo is a single one. If you're in America, though, just say cannoli, right? Don't be that guy who's like, I would like one cannolo, and act like you speak Italian. You're not. You're born in fucking Minneapolis. Just order your cannoli and shut up. What else? You know, we had a guest on. We had both Skeletor and Ryan on, and I asked him a question. And this happens with podcasts. I really try to avoid it, and I've tried to be on top of it as we've done this more and more. But we just... podcast hosts, they talk over each other sometimes, and I know as an elicitor that can be obnoxious, that can be annoying, so I try really hard to not do that. But we asked Ryan this one question. I asked him, do you have a favorite gun from a movie or a game or anything like that? And we never got to hear his answer, so I guess we'll just have to get him back on, and maybe Skeletor too. But this topic came up and we got some commentary about it. People said Borderlands guns were cool, Halo guns were cool. I'm pretty lame. It's so hard to narrow it down to just a single one, but I really like the old school Doom games from the 90s and Blood from 1997. All those old computer games from like MS-DOS, that era of stuff. I love those guns. Portable miniguns, all that stuff's really, really cool. One of my favorite games for realism is Red Orchestra 2. I think that was, I forget what console that was on. I played it on my computer in, like, I want to say, like, the late 2000s or something like that. But the guns there are very realistic. And the way that they make the Kar 98K recoil, the Wehrmacht service rifle, it feels like I'm shooting a real gun. And I haven't really seen a lot of video games do that. So very impressed by that. But yeah, I don't know if I have a fake gun that I like the best. I just like when they put something in fiction, like a movie or a game, and it feels real, like immersive. Like Anton Chigurh's shotgun from No Country for Old Men, there's some continuity issues with that. Like, that suppressor probably wouldn't work, and I think that model of shotgun came out after the movie was set, things like that. But who cares? It's cool, right? And it actually wasn't too unrealistic. It was not so unrealistic as to break my immersion in that film. So I really like his shotgun in that movie. The guns from Doom are cool. The pistol in the original Doom, it looks so weird. It's fascinating to me. It's like a Kel-Tec gun, but it's based off of a Beretta 92FS. I don't know. They hit something there that was really, really cool to me. Just the aesthetic of those guns. Like, you're fighting, like, demons on a moon base in Mars, but you've still got, like, a coach shotgun that has a wooden stock on it. It's cool. They didn't try to go with, like, a super sci-fi crazy aspect with a lot of those firearms, and I appreciate that. I kind of wish we'd get back to that in certain mediums. Like, there's that gun, or that movie with Chris Pratt. I think it was called Tomorrow War. I don't know. I didn't watch the movie. It looked like crap to me, but they're using rifles in that movie to fight these big giant aliens. And I know what rifle they're using. They're using like stock AR-15s, like precision, aero precision AR-15s with Hera Arms aftermarket parts. And they've got these tiny barrels. They're like 10 and a half inch barrels. And all this shit on the rifle, like flashlights and IR lasers and all this crap, right? But the characters in this movie, they're not using the scope on their rifle. They're not using sights. They're not using the IR laser or the flashlight. All that stuff is put on the gun to make it look like a futuristic space gun. But if you know what you're looking at, you're like, you just made your rifle like 6 pounds heavier for no reason. And they've got these tiny barrels with no suppressors, so the fireball on them would be immense. It would be super loud. And then at the end of the day, they're using this kind of like cucked 5.56 rifle that's achieving very low velocities against what are like these big like creatures. Like they're just like these big monsters, and they're like 3 or 4 times bigger than like a person. And if you know anything about ballistics and ballistic effects on soft tissue, and I hate to use this term, but stopping power, it's like, You really wouldn't want to use 5.56. There's a reason people don't use that stuff on big game like deer and not deer, but like elk and bear and stuff like that. Like, you want something with a little bit more punch to it. So like, my mind goes to like 338 Lapua, and then like 300 Win Mag, and I mean, you could even get into like the big stuff like 50 Beowulf and 50 AE and 50 BMG, just that caliber of stuff. I would not choose 5.56, which is meant to be very accurate at distance, meant to be lightweight for a soldier, and it's also very good at knocking down adult humans. Against alien creatures that are like 600 pounds and super strong and big, probably wouldn't be my first choice. So I just think that the armor in that movie didn't know what they were doing. They just thought, yeah, I'll make a cool sci-fi looking thing, and people won't bat an eye at it. But then I watched that movie and I go, well, that just completely takes me out of this world that you've tried to create, because now I'm just thinking about this lazy armorer. And they didn't even really try to make it realistic or cool. They went the lazy sci-fi route. So I really wish we'd get back to the roots a little bit with like the 1993 Doom game. It's just like, yeah, why not use a double barrel coach gun with a wooden stock to shoot demons? If they're about your size, that shotgun would really, I mean, that would pack a wall. That would get the job done. So why not put that in there? I also think just like some lesser used guns would be really cool. Like, one of my favorite games in the world. It's a horror game. It doesn't really focus on guns, but Cry of Fear is one of my favorite games of all time. And you get really strange weapons in that game because it's like a psychological horror. But one of the weapons you get is a short magazine Lee Enfield Mark IV, the smelly rifle, as I call it. But that's a British bolt-action rifle from World War II. And this game takes place in Sweden. And it doesn't make sense at all for this gun to be there, but it's cool and it fits in this weird way. And then also there's this scope crammed on there, which is this, it was a prototype scope built by the OSS, which is the predecessor to the CIA. the American CIA in World War II. So it's this British rifle from World War II with this weird scope that doesn't belong on there that was a prototype, and it's in Sweden in the 2010s. It doesn't make any sense, but the aesthetic of it is extremely pleasing, and it fits that world that they built. So I'd really like to get back into that, but I really encourage all of you listening, please ask us questions. I think soon I'm going to set up an email for you guys to write in, and we can kind of answer your stuff on air. But please, if you're listening to this on Spotify, there's a comments feature. Just if you're on your phone, you can kind of scroll down a little bit past the podcast, and there's a place to leave comments. Please do that. I see all of them. I reply to all of them. I really appreciate everyone who listens in and writes in comments. I take all your criticism to heart. I do want to make this podcast good because there's so damn many of you that listen to it now. Please write in questions. I really hope I get to them all. I also really appreciate you listening to just me ramble in a hotel room. Hopefully it hasn't been too disruptive or annoying for you guys to hear just me. Case will be back next week. I'm traveling for work, and he's probably back home shooting without me, probably drinking without me. So damn him for that, but we'll get him back next week, guys. All right, thanks for listening to Squibbloid Podcast. I'll see you guys next week. Bye.